The idea that revenge is sweet is commonly reinforced in our culture. Think of the films, the TV dramas, the novels, all working along the storyline of retaliation. Getting back at someone, it seems to be the mother of all tension. The discussion is revenge on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Contrary to what the fictional movies and TV shows may depict, the social scientists tell us that revenge is actually counterproductive. Basically, instead of making you feel better, it only leads you to experience more pain. David Chester is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University. His research seeks to understand why people hurt each other. He co-authored a piece on revenge in 2015, published in the journal Social, Cognitive, and Affective Neuroscience, and he was recently quoted in a Washington Post article titled, "Why Getting Even May Make You Feel Worse in the Long Run." David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, first, let's define our terms. What exactly is revenge?
Yeah, that's a pretty debatable topic. In psychological and neuroscience, we define it as something that we call, in a technical sense, retaliatory aggression. So that is when you try and hurt someone in response to perceiving some provocation.
So how did revenge become associated with our human nature, with what it means to be mortal, if you will?
Yeah, it's very complicated. I think that, and several other people agree with me, that revenge and the sweetness thereof and our enjoyment of it really stems from an evolutionary basis. It stems from a biological process where we retaliate against people who inflict costs on us to prevent further costs in the future, and that, you know, it kind of builds on this predatory tendency to kind of retaliate, get revenge, and to feel good doing so.
What prompts or motivates someone to seek revenge or to want to hurt someone else?
And that's a very complicated question. You know, there's a million reasons why people seek revenge, but when we think about it, I think it's best to break it down into two categories. And so one is what we call the ultimate reason, and the other is called the proximate reason. So ultimate reasons why people get revenge is because they want to, you know, seek justice or right the wrongs that have been done to them, or, you know, prevent being taken advantage of in the future, or look after the people that they love, you know. But proximate reasons are things that are more near or more, you know, currently felt. And those can stem from feeling angry, feeling wronged, but my research has shown that also feeling good, that feeling pleasure and feeling that sweetness of revenge can also motivate people to seek out revenge against other people.
Oh, because the feeling you have in the moment when you get that revenge feels good in the moment, but the repercussions perhaps are different in the long run?
Exactly, yeah. So in the moment, it can be, you know, the folk notion, the Shakespearean notion of sweet revenge can ring very true. And that while we're, you know, getting back at people who have, you know, we think have wronged us, that, you know, it does indeed feel very rewarding, very satisfying, but that in the long run, and by the long run, I mean more than 10 minutes. So I use that term very liberally, but, you know, people tend, you know, the sweetness of revenge tends to fade very, very quickly and descend into something worse. And it creates this kind of cycle that I think is very akin to an addictive behavior.
So what does this cycle look like? And how do you know it when it's being repeated?
Yeah, so I think that ties in perfectly with the last thing that I said, which is that, you know, revenge really looks like other addictive behaviors like, you know, drinking or gambling or compulsive eating, where, you know, you feel bad for whatever reason. Someone has insulted you or you've had a crummy day, and then you engage in this impulsive behavior. So in this case, it would be revenge. It feels good in the moment while you're doing it, very reinforcing, very pleasant. But very quickly, it fades and gives way to a very aversive state. And in fact, leaves you feeling worse than when you started, which then starts the cycle all over again, where now you're feeling crummy and you're looking into your environment for things that you can do to feel good. And so you turn to revenge. And so I argue that, you know, revenge is just like many other behaviors that we can do when we're trying to feel better. But in this case, it might actually perpetuate itself by being a little bit addictive.
Do we crave it then again and again once you've gotten revenge once? Do you want it again?
So that's the argument that myself and some of my co-authors are trying to make. And we think we have some pretty good evidence that that's the case. So that once you've gotten revenge, it's not done. You know, you haven't satisfied the urge. You now have created an increased compulsion as opposed to satisfying it, which is often people's motivation. They want to, you know, they feel angry that someone insulted them. They want to feel satisfied, so they, you know, they strike back at that person on social media. They send an angry email. But it doesn't really serve that goal. In fact, it makes them feel angrier and sadder and worse off than they began. So they send an angrier email, an angrier tweet, and it just perpetuates this cycle. And it relies on the same biological and psychological architecture as addictive behaviors like cocaine abuse.
And does it? Do you see an escalation of the revenge? Does it get bigger and bigger, more aggressive, more assertive each time?
Yeah, I mean, so there's some really great work looking across species and looking, you know, across different human cultures, and that we do see these cycles of violent escalation. So, you know, chimpanzees, tribes that exist next to each other will, you know, perform raids, and these raids will increase and increase and increase in intensity, and you see the same thing in human behavior. And the idea is that, you know, people think at a structural, systemic level that, you know, you always have to up the ante. You always have to convince your opponent that you are willing to inflict unspeakable harm on them. But I approach it from a different level, where we view it in a similar way that addiction works. And so that we don't have to think about it at the group level, where you're trying to tell the other group that, you know, you're really going to hurt them. But really, you can think about it at the individual level, where every time you get revenge, it feels good, but that high tends to fade.
Mm.
And so you're going to want to increase the amount of revenge that you inflict to increase the dose, as it were, to increase the bump that you're getting, because you tend to habituate to things that feel good.
Looking at the research on revenge this hour with David Chester. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University, where he researches to understand why people hurt each other. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Have you ever sought revenge? Was it a physical reaction, or did you find a social or emotional way to get back at someone? Is it hard to admit to yourself, or do you think you were justified? 800-642-1234. David Chester, the phrase an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, going back to Old Testament, it's thought to bring a sense of catharsis and closure. Do you think that saying is the reason the subject of revenge has stuck with us for so long?
I think that's part of it. You know, revenge is culturally very salient for our species. You know, look at any TV show you're watching on Netflix and try and tell me that revenge isn't a central theme, and I know that you're lying. Revenge is a core concept in just about every piece of art, literature, or music that we hear. So really, revenge is codified in our cultural system very, very deeply. But I think that reflects an evolved biological tendency that we have that, you know, when people wrong us, or at least we think they wrong us, we feel kind of this innate instinct to retaliate. And I think that we have taken that primitive biological instinct and we have beautifully elaborated upon it, you know, in movies like Princess Bride or in novels like Moby Dick. So I don't think that the cultural manifestations of revenge are what keep it, you know, perpetuated in our society. I think it is biologically rooted, but I do think that the two interplay very, very beautifully, but also very harmfully.
Is seeking revenge on someone increasing your stress? Is it detrimental to your physical and emotional health? Do you feel revenge is crucial to your happiness? Do you want every person who's hurt you to pay a price for their actions? These are questions to explore on Revenge this hour. David Chester is a psychology professor at Virginia Commonwealth University. His research seeks to understand why people hurt each other. Your thoughts on retaliation in life, 800-642-1234. Do you think about it differently in the short term and change your mind after some time has passed? Have you ever acted on revenge? You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll return after a news update. We're talking revenge and why people seek it on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for joining us. The movie is 15 years old now, but the dialogue in The Count of Monte Cristo is as dramatic as in the theater. A man's friend betrays him. After a decade in prison, he escapes and reinvents his persona. Then Edmond Dantès forces his former friend to answer for framing him for treason, sword at the ready.
Why are you doing this?
It's complicated. Let's just say it's vengeance for the life you stole from me.
Yeah, the pleasure of inflicting pain. It's a theme in the movie adapted from the classical novel of Vengeance. David Chester is helping us understand real-life retaliation and its aftermath. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University, where his research seeks to understand why people hurt each other. Your thoughts on revenge, 800-642-1234. Have you ever sought revenge? Was it a physical reaction, or did you find a social or emotional way to get back at someone? Is it hard to admit to yourself, or do you think you were justified? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. David, we heard that clip there in the film. Do you think that revenge in popular culture, in the movies and in novels elsewhere, is it depicted truthfully? Does it follow what your research finds?
I would say absolutely not. You know, I think that we as a culture have built up this very romantic Shakespearean view of revenge, where it is this, you know, virtuous, decades-long quest for justice, when the truth about revenge is far more mundane, it's far more pedestrian, and that revenge isn't just this, you know, big conquest to be obtained, but really it's an everyday occurrence. Throughout our days, as ordinary people, we are slighted, insulted, rejected, and provoked, and we seek retaliation for those slights, and they can range, you know, from being very subtle to being very, very severe. And so I think we've kind of built this cult up around revenge as this being this big romantic concept, when in fact it's the truth is it's just a very much a everyday part of life where we're, you know, costs are inflicted upon us, we inflict them upon others, and it doesn't really reflect this grandiose nature that we portray in modern day culture.
Let's bring in Ken, who joins us from Black River Falls. Hi, Ken. Go ahead.
Yeah, saying that I'm familiar with and that I think is true is that revenge is best served cold. You don't have to react immediately. Think about it. And two things might happen. First, you might just say, well, what difference does it make? And the other is you might get the result that you're seeking with revenge.
And Ken, how long, when you say is best served cold, you mean having a waiting period before you take any action on what has been dealt against you? Is that
well,
what you're saying?
I don't think that people would define it quite that.
Okay. What do you mean
way?
Then?
You don't have to react immediately. That's what I'm saying. A lot of people get into trouble because they react immediately, and their revenge is connected with the act that they're getting even for. sometimes it doesn't pay to do that. Just think it through, and if it needs to be addressed, get to it when you get to it. Or another alternative is just point out to the person that you're thinking of getting revenge on that they've provoked you to that point, and a little bit of a verbal confrontation might work if everybody's sober anyhow.
Ken, thank you so much for calling in. Let's get David to respond.
Ken, you bring up really one of the most crucial parts of the revenge experience, which is the time delay. There's the onset, which is where you perceive that you are insulted or slighted, rejected, et cetera. And then when does the revenge come in? And so there's this, you know, unfortunate view of the aggressive person as being this impulsive, rashly acting individual. But in fact, a big proportion of aggressive acts are perpetrated with a lot of forethought, a lot of planning, a lot of premeditation. And so revenge, indeed, is often a dish that is, whether it's best served cold, I can't really say, but it is often served cold. People do often have a big delay between when they feel slighted and when they get their retribution. And now we're studying who are the types of people who wait and get revenge later versus those that get revenge immediately. And there's a very interesting picture that's being painted. My graduate student, Sam West, has done some really great experiments showing that people who are high in self-control, people who could, you know, resist temptation in the short run to get a goal in the long run, are actually really, really revengeful. And that in the long term, they are willing to forgo immediate retribution to get a grander form of revenge at a later date. So as we look at this larger time frame of revenge, we're getting a really more, you know, complicated, colorful, and beautiful picture where it's not just that aggression is caused by being impulsive and being, you know, not having control over your impulses, but in fact that many people who do live very controlled, regulated lives still seek revenge, but they seek it in a very delayed fashion.
What about people who plot revenge but never carry it out? Do you find that there are those people as well who think up these elaborate types of revenge, stew on it a long time, and then never act?
Yeah, so there's lots of questionnaires that we have that assess different aspects of the vengeful person, and one of those is fantasies of revenge. And so just like people have fantasies of sexual nature or of eating their favorite food and so on and so forth, people often fantasize about getting revenge, and they do so in elaborate detail. And that just doing so is not necessarily predictive of whether or not you're going to get revenge. So we've done lots of studies where we measure the extent to which people, you know, fantasize about getting vengeance upon those who have wronged them, and we don't really always find a correlation between the tendency to fantasize about revenge and the tendency to actually seek it when we give people the opportunity in a laboratory setting. So I think, again, revenge is a very common, ubiquitous phenomenon that a lot of people experience, but not everyone acts upon.
Does fantasizing about revenge, spending time thinking a lot about what the revenge would look like, does that deliver similar types of feelings that the actual revenge would have? Could that feeling of wanting, you know, that same feeling that you would get when you would seek the revenge and get the revenge by just plotting it? And I didn't articulate that quite well, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
I do, yeah. I mean, it is a great question as to whether that can be a true surrogate for revenge. Can just thinking about it and fantasizing about it really take the place of it? And, for the most part, the data says yes, that, you know, just thinking about it and imagining it happening, you know, most people do fantasize about revenge, but most people do not act on those feelings in the same way that most of us fantasize about what our lunch could be, but we don't necessarily have, you know, the Philly cheesesteak. So there's a disconnect between our desires and our behavior, And just like with any other rewarding behavior, revenge seems to reflect that.
Do you see a difference across gender when you look at those who seek revenge? Are women more empathetic, or do men seek revenge more? Do we stereotype revenge?
Yeah, I mean, so, and we do definitely stereotype revenge. I mean, we believe that revenge is a male endeavor. It's a male industry. And I approached this question from that biased perspective. I remember in graduate school, I expected that men would be the revenge seekers and that women would not. And the data don't bear that out at all. So actually, men and women are both very likely to seek revenge. And they're both very likely to seek it out both in social forms, so spreading rumors about people, gossip, but also in physical forms, where hitting, kicking, punching, biting, things like that. So this idea that men are the revenge seekers and women are not is antiquated. And both men and women seek revenge, and they seek it in nuanced ways. The few gender differences that we do see are that men enjoy it more, or at least say that they do. So men definitely report that when they're getting back at someone that it feels better, and when we actually look at their brains, we see more activity in the reward circuit, and we see that, you know, there's more dopamine activity in those regions. So we do think that men get more of a kick out of revenge than women do. But there are other nuances there as well, because women are more empathic, but empathy is not always a panacea. So Paul Bloom, a Yale University psychology professor, recently published a book called Against Empathy, where in fact empathy can often motivate people to seek revenge. You know, so if you see someone who's been wronged, you want to get back at the person who wronged them. You want to retaliate against the person who inflicted the pain on them. So it's not that empathy is this, you know, pacifying, hug-promoting experience. In fact, empathy can motivate people to hurt others, especially to seek retribution and revenge. So women do tend to score higher on empathy scales, but that this may not result in lower revenge-seeking. In fact, it may result in higher revenge-seeking, but they're not seeking revenge for themselves. They're seeking revenge for people who are close to them.
Talking right now with David Chester. He's helping us understand revenge, retaliation, its aftermath, its impact on us. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University. You can join this with your questions and your insights on revenge. 800-642-1234. Do you desire more vengeance as you get older, perhaps? Or are you more likely to let things go? How do you feel about revenge? Do you think about it differently in the short term and change your mind after some time has passed? When did someone exact revenge on you? How did you respond? How did you understand and did you understand it and why? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. It seems, David Chester, you're saying that even bystanders can be impacted by revenge when they see it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are very vicariously impacted by the suffering of others. And there is a trove of evidence supporting that. And so we are not just walking through this life experiencing our own suffering, but we experience the suffering of others vicariously, and we want to seek retribution on their behalf. And so revenge is not simply a very simple phenomenon where you wronged me, now I'm going to wrong you in return. In fact, it's far more complicated, in which we see people, other people that we care about being wronged, and we seek vengeance on their behalf, which, you know, complicates the issue in a very interesting way.
So you've conducted studies that suggest that revenge and aggression are prompted by the need to self-regulate after social rejection. How does emotion then explain the relationship between social rejection and revenge?
Yeah, I mean, so decades of work now have shown that rejection hurts, and doesn't hurt metaphorically, it hurts very literally. So, I mean, when you see people get rejected while they're undergoing a brain scan, it looks as if we stabbed them a little bit with a knife, you know, and if you give them a Tylenol, in fact, it reduces the experience of pain after being excluded or seeing a picture of your ex. So it's very clear that rejection hurts in a very literal, true way. And so if revenge is truly sweet, then people should employ that to counteract the pain of rejection. And that's exactly what we see. So when you reject people experimentally in the laboratory, they look around them for ways to feel good. You know, rejected people are in pain in a very literal sense, and they're willing to do a lot of very impulsive behaviors to find things that feel good. In a series of studies, we found that people who have been rejected only seek to get revenge when they think it will feel good. When they think that it will fix their mood, it will bring them back to how they were feeling before, when it will repair how they feel.
Let's bring in Tina now from Milwaukee. Hi, Tina. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, what age group is more likely to do a revengeful act? Like, I work with I used to work with middle school, high school students, and they would tell me some bizarre, crazy stories. And I just wondered if it was because they're, you know, their brains are so underdeveloped that they were so quick to, you know, want to hurt somebody or be revengeful. I have a story. Should I tell you?
Go ahead, Tina.
Okay. So one of my students was telling me, my student was 17 years old. She was in middle school, the junior in high school. And she was telling me how somebody had wronged her mother, and she was really upset about it. She was an immigrant from Mexico. Her mom works really hard, five kids in the house. And she wanted to get back at this person because they had ripped her off, her mom off, didn't pay her mom for the cleaning and the whatever she did. So she and her brother went and sliced all the tires on this person's vehicle. A week later, this person came back and sliced their tires. Now, they couldn't afford it, so it actually hurt her parents more by the revenge, and she felt really badly about it. However, didn't change her thinking. I didn't think it changed her thinking, because down the road, she would tell me more stuff. So, with that being said, have you discovered that there's more teenage, you know, issues with the law and that kind of stuff, maybe where they're getting in trouble more, and it ends up being that it's revenge related? Or
Tina, thank you so much. David, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is a critical question as to the development of revenge seeking, and there's not enough work for us to make really any conclusive claims. I mean, based off of what we know currently, you can definitely expect that revenge seeking, especially at the impulsive level, will be higher among adolescents. They really don't have the inhibitory capacity to really feel inflicted upon, feel, you know, that a cost has been inflicted upon them, and not to retaliate against them. So turning the other cheek doesn't really exist for the 16-year-old from a neurobiological perspective. And some of the research that we've done has looked at the brain and found that the people who don't seek revenge are those who have very strong connections between the prefrontal cortex and the reward centers of the brain.
We're talking right now with psychology professor David Chester. He was recently quoted in a Washington Post article titled, "Why Getting Even May Make You Feel Worse in the Long Run." He researches revenge, what it does to us. Your questions about revenge, 800-642-1234. Back after this news. Why do some people intentionally hurt other people instead of showing them compassion? We punish them for their misconduct. Where does revenge come from, and how can we find forgiveness? We're untangling these tough questions on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Virginia Commonwealth University psychology professor David Chester stays with us. He co-wrote a piece on revenge in 2015 in the journal Social Cognitive and Affective Neuroscience. Your questions about retaliating and moving to forgiveness at 800-642-1234. How do you prevent yourself from getting even? What tips do you have for people you care about who say they want revenge? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. David, before we move into a conversation about forgiveness, we stopped our conversation on the teenage brain and seeking revenge and wondering whether revenge and the need for it grows weaker as we age. Do we grow wiser with age when it comes to seeking revenge?
We do, it appears, at least from a neurobiological perspective, where as the brain matures and the connections between the parts of the brain that can inhibit and regulate behavior towards more long-term goals, they tend to mature. The people who can effectively do this tend to be the people who don't seek revenge. The revenge seekers tend to be those who haven't really developed these strong connections between the inhibitory parts of the brain and the parts of the brain that find revenge rewarding.
David tweeted at WPR Mornings, he says, success is what's important for your life and not to have the desire for revenge. Can we quell this desire for revenge?
I hope so. That's the dream. That's the goal. And I think that tweet really cuts to the heart of it, is that if we have this impulse for revenge and that revenge is this rewarding behavior, it's going to be tough to get rid of. It's going to be hard to tell people, oh, just don't seek revenge, because it's kind of an innate tendency. So if we want to do so, we have to approach it the same way we approach a lot of other addictive behaviors, where you don't try and ignore that there's the impulse, but you try and figure out, okay, how can we satisfy this impulse in a healthy way? And so it's not that, how do I get revenge on this person by hurting them? But maybe you can reconceptualize revenge as, how do I get revenge by improving myself?
So what are some alternatives we can practice to the impulse for revenge?
I think there's a three-pronged system that we can all employ. The first is to try and always improve on ourselves and our ability to regulate emotions. So when we feel angry, when someone insults us, or at least we perceive that happened, to try and find a way to regulate that emotion so that our feelings don't dictate our behaviors, that we are truly guiding our behaviors based on our long-term goals and not on our short-term feelings. And I think the second one is that we need to redefine revenge, and that revenge should not be conceptualized as hurting someone else, but it should be redefined as improving ourselves. And so that instead of trying to bring someone else down, we should elevate ourselves above them by engaging in all kinds of reparative behaviors and trying to improve who we are through many, many different ways. And then the last one is, if just in the short term, because I'm a human too, and there's lots of times where I get a nasty email and I feel like I want to hurt someone in response, is just to do something that feels good, you know? So if the idea is that revenge is sweet and we do it because it's sweet, just do something else that feels good. So find another activity in your day that is also rewarding.
So revenge and taking the high road, so to speak, is always seen as, or seems to be seen as the noble thing to do. But why do you find that people don't always necessarily take the high road?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same reason why people eat fast food when they're on diets, and why they sleep in when they mean to get up at 6 a.m., and why they fail on their New Year's resolutions, because immediately rewarding behaviors tend to win out over less rewarding longer-term goals. Mm. And I think that we've been conceptualizing revenge in the wrong way. It really should be placed with behaviors like alcohol abuse and compulsive eating and gambling behaviors, but we've, again, maintained this romantic version of revenge where, you know, seeking justice against one's wrongdoers is a really good thing to do. But really, I think it's a very similar thing to, you know, eating junk food, where you just feel an impulse to do it, and sometimes you're able to resist the impulse and sometimes you're not.
Let's bring in Jane, who joins us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm calling to say that in February of 2016, a male coworker shot and killed my 24-year-old daughter. as she was leaving her shift. He was very angry and blamed her for his troubles. And we decided not to go the route of revenge and anger and foment hate, because that wouldn't do anybody any good. It wasn't going to bring my daughter back. And there's also a little person involved. I will never hurt this little child by disparaging the man who took my daughter's life. He's a beautiful child. He's smart. He's empathetic. And I'm not going to bring him down because of something that wasn't his fault.
David Chester, go ahead.
Well, Jane, I mean, I can't say enough how sorry I am that you've had to go through that, and how amazingly beautiful and graceful of a response you've had to that horrible event in your life. I wish we could all do what you've done. I wish that we could all respond to something like such unprejudiced violence and in a way that you have. But I'm not sure that we all have that capacity. So I hope that we can use people like you as an example, and we can strive towards your example and try and fail to reciprocate violence with violence, and instead reciprocate violence with forgiveness.
And Jane brings up children. How can we raise children to be less vengeful?
This is a very complicated question that I've been considering a lot with some of my colleagues. I mean, I think one of the first things that we can do is drop revenge as a culturally reinforced value. Everywhere you go in our society, revenge is propped up and heralded as something that you should seek when you are wronged. And in lots of cases, indeed, you should. That you should not just let others walk all over you. But again, as I've mentioned throughout this interview, that revenge is not just this romantic concept. It happens throughout our days. And if we're constantly preoccupied by it and trying to seek satisfaction through it, we're always going to be dissatisfied, and we're always going to be hurting ourselves and hurting others. So we need to teach children that you should always seek justice, but that revenge doesn't always equal justice.
Can they understand that concept even at a young age?
No, that's the great question. I'm not a developmental psychologist, which is probably why I'm posing such a ridiculous question to such young children. I hope so. I hope there are ways to convey that information to them. I'll leave that to wiser minds than my own.
In the meantime, how can people, not to put it this way, but watch their backs from having someone seek revenge on them? What should they be paying attention to? And then how might they respond to that absurd email?
Yeah, I mean, that's life's big question. Once you get the email, how do you look out for yourself? You know, for the most part, I have no idea. And I have no way to counsel people with that. But I can say one thing is that there are certain types of people who are more prone to revenge than others. And if you can identify these traits in a person, then maybe steer clear of them. So in our research, we have identified some very reliably linked personality characteristics that are linked to revenge seeking. And those are a tendency to responds to emotions with impulsive behavior. So when you feel any given feeling very strongly, you tend to act on it. Also to premeditate your actions so that you're not just acting impulsively, but you're also thinking about ways to enact those impulses in the long term. And then lastly, that you tend to enjoy inflicting pain on other people. And that last one is the key one. So we've done some analyses called dominance analyses that have shown that at the core of revenge seeking is this tendency we call sadism, where others' pain becomes our pleasure. And so if you find individuals who tend to take great joy in others' pain, those are hands down the most likely to seek revenge upon you. So look out for those characteristics in people, and if you see them, try and avoid those individuals.
As we wrap up here, David Chester, what do we still not know in the research on revenge?
Oh, gosh, everything. We really have so much left to do. The main question that keeps me awake at night is, how do we keep revenge from happening? Because the vast majority of aggression is retaliatory in nature. So the vast majority of when people hurt others is because they perceive that that person has wronged them. So terrorism, all the way down to bullying, is a retaliatory, revenge-based phenomenon. So if we can solve the question of revenge, we can solve these societal and global issues that we have been working for decades and decades and decades to try and resolve. So we have so much to understand, and I hope that this conversation motivates other people to try and seek answers to revenge. But, yeah, I mean, the questions that I'm trying to answer is, what can we do concretely to reduce revenge? And right now it's that threefold system that I proposed earlier, where you should, you know, try and regulate your emotions. You should try and redefine what revenge means in a way that's more about self-improvement than hurting others. And in the short term, you should try and make yourself feel better as opposed to getting satisfaction through revenge.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking time with us.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure.
David Chester is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University. His research seeks to understand why people hurt each other. He was recently quoted in a Washington Post article titled, "Why Getting Even May Make You Feel Worse in the Long Run." This hour of the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And this conversation about revenge, you hear it on the Ideas Network.